Portland's annual Hemp Stock Harvest Festival in Portland, Oregon, advocates decriminalization of cannabis for medicinal, industrial, and recreational use. It will feature food vendors, guest speakers, and live music, including a performance by John Trudell and Bad Dog. Again, that's the Hemp Stock Harvest Festival, October 17th and 18th at Tom McCall Waterfront Park in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good Shield of Gear and Mignon Gailey, and this is Air Cascadia. Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, October 14th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Coming up today, we have an extremely special guest. We have a great speaker. Beverly Bell is joining us. She's a writer and organizer on food sovereignty, coordinator of Other Worlds, and an associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. Currently, she's working with the U.S. Food Sovereignty Alliance. And we are inviting her to join us today on Air Cascadia because today in Des Moines, Iowa, the center of what is left of American agriculture, the Food Sovereignty Prize is awarded to, wait for it, the Federation of Southern Cooperatives. It's run by African-American farmers in the southern United States, and it's part of the Black Fraternal Organization of Honduras as well. A lot has been happening on this front for years. The organizations of African-American farmers have finally, at last, been granted what has been their due for decades, if not centuries. There was recently, I believe it was awards that went out, monetary restitution to Black farmers to whom who were more or less left out when the white hogs rushed to the trough a few years back to collect money due to family farms. And they were not notified that they had money coming to them. And they did, find out. Effort was made to make things right. That was years back, and I believe that still to this day that many African-American farmers have not been able to collect on what was promised to them. This is this is a disgrace. This is tragedy. And when America hurts African-Americans, farmers, whether people live in the country or the city, wherever, America is really hurting herself. She harms herself unwittingly. America has done so many things unwittingly, and this so close to home does perhaps greater damage than all of the other mistakes and errors that the United States has committed, particularly as we see in recent years in faraway places where the people cannot pronounce, they couldn't find the country that they are attacking on the map. They have got no idea what the people are like. They have no idea what the language is, what any of the cultural attributes are, and yet it's perfectly okay to go out bombing them. Close to home, we need to remind ourselves every day, the contribution that African-American farmers have made to this country. That said, I want to put out a warm welcome to Beverly Bell, who is joining us today. And we want to talk a little bit about what this award means and what are we talking about when we talk about food sovereignty.
Good morning, Chris. I'm so happy to be speaking with you.
This is a big day, isn't it, for a lot of people around the country?
Yeah, it's a big day for a lot of people. It's a very pro-corporate day, as seems to be most days in the U.S., but of course, as always, there is another narrative, and I'm so glad that you're bringing it to the fore.
Yeah, there was this new piece by Eric Holt Jimenez, the executive director of Food First, it says, I find here in a press release, it contrasts organizations with the dominant view of agriculture. And over the last four decades, we've consistently produced 1.5 times enough food for every man, woman, and child on the planet. And yet people still go hungry. What is food sovereignty, and what does it mean in the context of black farmers today?
Food sovereignty is a wonderful, wonderful concept that has been around in the global south in small farmer-based countries and countries where small farmer production are quickly being destroyed by multinational agribusiness. Food sovereignty has only recently hit the U.S., and the organization that I run, Other Worlds, is a very proud member of something called the U.S. Food Sovereignty Alliance, which is a network of dozens of farmer groups, activist groups, immigrant rights groups, fisher people, migrant farm workers, etc., who have all come together to promote this idea in the U.S. So I'll break it down because I know it's unknown to most people still, but that's changing.
Isn't that funny? I farm, so I find out about these things. You know, I read these various, magazines and whatnot, journals that I get. So I find it still passing strange that more people don't know about this.
Right. So maybe I could just start saying two concepts that your listeners probably do know about. One is food justice, which is a very wonderful U.S. phenomenon that talks about local growing for local consumption and looks at some of the structural patterns of racism and such that have blocked that. Then there is food security, which is a global concept that means that you get adequate quantity of food, good quality of food, and food when you need it. Well, that might help in situations of most extreme disaster, but it also risks putting local farmers out of business when, again, U.S. agribusiness, in the name of food security, can dump their crops on low-income nations. Food sovereignty includes both of these issues, but goes much, much further and says that a people has a right to produce and consume its own food, and that we have the right to have not only the food itself, but what is needed to make that food. And in this case, we're talking about, for example, land for black farmers. It means resources, it means access to credit, it means access to water, and it talks notably about power. And it says that citizens of the world and of each country have the should control their local food systems, and the nation should control its domestic food system. So this means taking power out of the hands of multinational corporations, out of the hands of the World Trade Organization, and putting it back where it used to belong, which was small farmers and all the rest of us who eat.
Yeah, Vandana Shiva talks a lot about this, and I do know that Monsanto and Syngenta and these companies have been genetically modified products on African American farmers because they see it as kind of a soft spot, you know, like, well, we'll give you, it's like, hey kid, the first dose is free, like, here, try this, and then of course then they're tied into this
right.
system, and it's not only is it bad for the farmers themselves, bad for the land, bad for crops, but it's also it's an insult to the farmers. Monsanto would see African American farmers as more likely to cave in to their blandishments than some others, and they're not they don't believe it, they don't believe the hype. They've been for years and years and years been fed hype by a dominant white population, and nobody's taken it anymore. So this is so important and wonderful that this prize is being awarded, and that food sovereignty has become a front burner topic.
I completely agree. As for Monsanto, I was in Mississippi a few years ago meeting with some of the farmers of the Federation of Southern Cooperatives, which we'll talk about in a minute, which is the group of black farmers across 13 states that is one of the two winners of the Food Sovereignty Prize, which is the counter prize to the World Food Prize, which is the corporate prize that is given today in Des Moines. But what I was told by these farmers is that they have looked all around the state to find corn for their cattle that is not GMO, and they absolutely cannot find it. They don't believe that it exists in the state of Mississippi. Monsanto has completely locked up the market. We saw the same thing, exactly what you just spoke about, Chris, in Haiti after the earthquake of 5 years ago, when Monsanto came in, said that it was giving a gift, and brought in, I believe, 600 tons of seed, some of them so toxic that farmers in the U.S. are forbidden by the U.S. government from even using this seed, and they were told that this was a gift. Well, of course, as you say, once they start planting it, then their own heirloom ancestral seeds die out, and they cannot replant hybrids because they don't grow the same as the first generation. So then they're hooked into this market of having to buy seeds every year, whereas in the past, they, like farmers all over the world, saved their seeds, of course, that's what agriculture is, and then replanted. So yes, it's a travesty, and as you say, the great news today is that there is a big pushback and there is an alternative in the U.S. and all over the world.
That's what we mean by food sovereignty, is taking back, taking control over the deep structure, the sources, not just of the seeds, but where the seeds come from. So, let's see, we have a couple minutes left. I want to just ask you a little bit more about what about this Federation of Southern Cooperatives and how it came into being, and where they're headed next, because this is powerful. There's power in organizing and coming together as a community to accomplish these goals.
That's exactly right. So the Federation of Southern Cooperatives was started in 1967 by the five main civil rights groups who knew that it was not enough just to have political and social power for African Americans. They also needed economic power. And today, the Federation is more than three dozen cooperatives spread across 13 states in the Deep South, from Texas to South Carolina. They're about 95% African American, although there are also Latino, Native, and white farms. And they have come together to try and address the structural racism that you spoke about in your introduction, and also to try and keep land in the hands of black farmers, who today control less than 1% of land in the U.S.
And we think about what that picture looked like years and years ago. But that is turning around, and there is restorative justice playing a hand in this whole picture as well. I want to thank you so much, Bev. We are actually out of time, and I want to ask you to come back on the show. We need to talk about this in greater detail, acquaint listeners with the what role black farmers play right now in sustaining the kind of agriculture, the kind of farming that it's not going to be in the future this sort of happy little organic farming choice. It's going to be a necessity, and African American farmers are right now leading the way. So I want to again thank you so much. The award is meaningful in so many different ways that we've barely been able to touch upon here today. So I do want to thank you so much for being with us today. My guest has been Beverly Bell, writer, organizer on food sovereignty, and coordinator of Other Worlds. Thanks again for that, Bev. This has been, of course, Air Cascadia for Wednesday, October 14th, 2015, and engineering show for us today, Kate Welch. Thanks for that, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOOM News and Public Affairs Director. I do want to remind listeners that coming up this weekend, the 10th Annual Northwest Indian Storytelling Festival. There are venues every year. It starts on Thursday. There's an evening event honoring National Indian Education Association. That's going to be from 7 to 9:30 at the First Unitarian Church. Then again, from Friday evening at Portland Community College Cascade Campus, again at 7 p.m. This festival continues. The NISA, that's the education organization, the Emerging Tribal Storytellers Workshop. Then Saturday evening, big event, 7 p.m. at the Portland Art Museum, and that's going to be a huge festival of storytelling, and then Emerging Tribal Storytellers Matinee on Sunday. Perhaps the most exciting. These are the young people.